I have to make a correction. I got an email from someplace. I don't even know where it was, a Gmail account. So I don't know where it was from. Who corrected something that I said last week? Last week I told a story about Mr. Jaffe, I think, no, and how he would say there will be ordnung here and so on and so forth. So this person,
I don't remember.
I talked about Gilu Bera Adah, that you have to be joyful, but also titter and so on. So I told a story about being at the Great Synagogue on Simchas Torah, and people started getting a little bit out of hand. Then the president of the shul, Dr. Jaffe, got up and said. So I was informed by this long distance correspondence who were the shear on the net that Mr. Jaffe came from an English. English language with Lubavitch roots, so he would be absolutely horrified if he were to be tagged as a Yekka. So I hereby correct that. Dr. Maurice Jaffe was in fact from Lubavitch family, which makes his behavior all the more questionable. But in any event, that's what. Okay. Last week we actually didn't get to the Mishnah. Today we will actually get to the first Mishnah. This is one of all of Mishnah is our kitchen last week, but it's really, this first one is really one of those, you have to take a long time to sort of get everything out of it. So Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, Moses received the Torah from Sinai and passed it on, Masarali Yoshua, this came in, and Joshua passed it on to the elders, this came in the Nevi'im, and the elders passed it on to the prophets, and Nevi'im Misarul, Anshek Nesedagdola, and the prophets passed it on to the members of the Great Assembly. That's why the institution the legislative institution that ostensibly runs the country is called the Knesset. Although somebody pointed out to me a long time ago that the first person to suggest the name of Knesset for the legislative body was in fact Rav Kook in a tshuva that he wrote sometime in the 20s. So give people a credit where credit is due. Hey, Mamrush Lo Shadvarim, they were known to have said three things as their mottos. We'll get to this later. Havu Metunim Badin, you should be deliberate in judgment, whatever that means. Vamidu Talmidim Harbei, make a lot of students. And Asus Yag LaTorah, make a fence around the Torah. The first question that pops up from this Mishnah is, what's it doing here? So I understand the second half, because Avot is all about all kinds of, you know, ethical and advices and so on. Okay, fine, good. But the whole chain of tradition, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, Masara Lisu, all that, where's Masechet Avot in the Mishnah? Where does it sit? It's after Sanhedrin. It's after Sanhedrin. It's deep. In fact, it's so lost. It's not even listed on the side of the Shas bindings. You see, Sanhedrin. This should be the opening of the Mishnah.
Is it also sort of not really accurate?
It's roughly accurate. I mean, Moses gave it to Yoshua. Yoshua gave it to Pinchas and those guys, and they passed it on to the Shoftim, and then they passed on it to Shmuel, and Shmuel started with the Nevi'im, and the Nevi'im passed. Well, the Kohanim could be among the elders, or that's true.
Yeah.
No, that's actually a very good point.
Historically, maybe there's a message that they want to say, because
they're... There were a lot of messages we're going to say, if I'm going to get to that. But I didn't...
Elazar,
did someone mention... Last week we looked at the expanded version of this from Avot Rabbi Natan, and there Elazar, Tamar, and Pinchas, they're all mentioned.
Oh, there is an expanded version?
There is an expanded version. There's an expanded version of, well, you know that there is the Mishnah and there's Tosefta. There's all this, when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi redacted the Mishnah based on prior efforts done by Rabbi Akiva, so, I mean, he had these enormously long, passages, which he pared down to the absolute minimum. Sometimes he pared them down so much that they're absolutely not understandable, and the Gemara has to expand them to give some idea of what it's talking about. So earlier versions of the same Mishnah or parallel versions are found in Avot Rabbi Natan, of which there are two versions on it by itself. So, but this is the pared down version. But why is this in Avos? On the contrary, the truth of the matter is, it should be the beginning of the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is the great formulation, the great summary of the Torah Shebal Peh. That's what the Rambam does. In the beginning of the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam runs the whole thing. He says, God, Moses got the Torah, and he goes and he runs through all the generations from Moshe Rabbeinu down to the redaction of the Gemara, up and back and up and back a few times.
Doesn't want to link it by saying these sayings, which we're now going to learn, they go all the way back to Moshe.
So very good. So is the Mishnah. First of all, they don't. They're pegged to historical figures in the Second Temple period. Number one. Number two. So you have to connect the the Second Temple people. They're not First Temple people. So what's going on here? So why is it here? So look, if you take a look at the first, so there's all kinds of different explanations. The one that I actually wanted to point out is this. Rabbi Avadia mi Bertanoro. Avadia Bertanoro was an Italian from the town of Bertanoro, which is on the Adriatic Sea. Avadia Bertanoro was Italian. He studied in the French yeshivot of Rabbi Yosef Cologne in the 15th century, and he made aliyah. And he left behind some really interesting letters about his time on the way to his travels, leaving southern Italy, or actually central Italy. And first he went to Sicily, and from Sicily he went to Eretz Israel. What?
We have his travelogue.
We have his travelogue, exactly. These letters are his travelogue. What? In any event, he's in Sicily for a year. Still one down the bottom to the Shiloach, and you swing around to the left, hard left on the Har Zeitim side. You drive straight down the road there. There's a parking lot, and at the bottom, mamish at the bottom of Har Zeitim, is the kever of Rabbi Avadia Bertanoro. For me, it was a very, very meaningful thing to go there the first time because his teacher, Rabbi Yosef Cologne, was the man about which I wrote my doctorate. So that was, I spent 10 years of my life. What? Cologne. Well, Columbus means dove. Cologne means dove, as does Columbus. I don't think there's any connection. And the question of whether Columbus was Jewish or not is fun for fantasies and for historical novels. In any event, so Rabbi Avadia Bertanoro writes as follows. But his perush is, among other things, it's usually just a combination of what the Rashi says and the Rambam says. But occasionally there's a contemporary moment in what he says, which is worth noting. Omer ani. He says, I'm going to tell you. Lefisha masechet zo einam yusedet al perush mitzvah mi mitzvot haTorah. Kishar masechto shebemishnah. This masechta, it's not, there's no halacha here. It's all eitzes and musar and all kinds of, no halachas here. No mitzvahs. Elakula musarim umidot. It's all, ethical sayings and developing proper moral conduct and so on. וחכמי אומות העולם גם כן חיברו ספרים כמו שבדו מליבם בדרכי המוסר. The truth is, plenty of non-Jewish sages wrote similar books that they made up along according to their own ideas. בדרכי המוסר כיצד יתנהג האדם עם חברו. How should a person act with his fellow? He says so. So the guy may have stuff like that, and we have stuff like that. Lefichach, hitchila tana b'masechet zo, Moshe kibel Torah miSinai, lomar lecha shamidot v'musarim shebezo ha-masechta lo badu otam chachmei ha-mishnah milibam, ela af elu nemru b'si. He said, the reason why the shalshelet ha-masoret, the chain of tradition, is dafka here, and not at the beginning of the Mishnah, is a very simple one. He said, no one would think for half a minute that somebody else has Kriyat Shema, and has Shmoneh Esrei, Hilchot Shabbat, and Pesach, and Shavuos, and Sukkot, and all of Masechta, and all of Seder Noshim, and Baba Kama, Baba Basra, all these things they're uniquely Jewish. But to have a book of ethical conduct, everybody does that. I mean, Aristotle did that, Plato did that, and Marcus Aurelius did that, and Aquinas, everybody, and in his time, don't forget, he's living. Avadia Bertanoro is an exact contemporary of Lorenzo Magnifico Medici, Lorenzo the Magnificent, and the Accademia in Florence, and Marsilio Ficino, and Giovanni Tico della Mirandola, and all as Renaissance humanism really comes into very high gear, and he overlaps with Michelangelo and Leonardo, and he's right in the middle of all this stuff. He's very much aware of the fact that the non-Jews have created something too. So he says, lest you think that it's all of a piece, that's all of Todavar, they're all the same thing. He says, no. The reason, nobody has to come to tell me that there's something special about the uniquely, ostensibly uniquely Jewish elements in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, or in the Torah. But where you have something where you might be tempted to go into relativism, they have, we have, it's all the same. No. There is a fundamental qualitative quantitative and qualitative difference between Jewish morality, which derives not from just what people make up out of what seems reasonable, but it comes also from Sinai. Now, there's a deeper issue here, which is hiding behind a statement. First of all, you're talking about a Jewish community, which is a majority community, which among Christians that are just doing amazing things. So this is a statement of, we are no less. There's a defensiveness, there's something apologetic here. It might even be more than that, because traditionally Italian Jews, especially in this era, think that they're actually superior to the Gentiles. One of the things that marks the Italian Renaissance is the fact that you're looking for something which is older. You're always looking for the ancient Roman, the ancient Latin, the ancient this, the ancient that. And among the things, the Christians would come and ask the Jews, teach us the Hebraica Veritas, the Jewish truth. And you have all kinds of strange chavruses between cardinals, like Egidio de Viterbo is learning Hebrew and Jewish studies with a Jew named Azaria de Rossi, and v'chein hala, v'chein hala. That's how Christian Kabbalah started. Okay? People like Yochanan Alemano and Eliyahu del Merigo and others learned Kabbalah.
Madonna.
What?
Madonna.
Yeah, no, that's the difference. Let me make it very clear. There is a difference between Kabbalah and Kabbalah. Kabbalah is this. Well, I'll tell you what Kabbalah is. About 10 years ago, somebody brought, somebody dumped off, we have one in the show actually, a set of Ashlag Zohars that were free. So the question was, yeah, remember they're going just giving them
every
away. Shouldn't be without. I was very much against having them come in. I said these guys are frauds and they're fakers. Anyways, free books is free books. So anyways, and in fact, there were a few times that I've used the volume in the show too. So I'm so glad you have it, because I don't. The Zohar I have is falling apart. At the time, so I did a little research about the Kabbalah Center, which used to be on, remember, where first it was Kentucky Fried Chicken, and then it became the Kabbalah Center. And the, one of the things that popped up was the fact that they have a whole accessories section. So one of the things they have accessories is, one thing is they sell, you know, Sochim Adumim, they sell Reita Bendelach, the red strings, for, if I remember correctly, they sold for $36 a piece, but I guess in the States in Target you can get them for less, $25. So at the time I put this up on the net. It was this big long discussion because some of the more spiritual people in Ephrat were very much against my extreme Lithuanian skepticism or cynicism. So I got an email from the guy who then ran Kever Rachel, and he said, $28 for a red string? He says, they go and they wrap it around the cenotaph of Rachel Imenu, and they say Tillim, this and that, and the other thing, and they get, how much do you get for a right to Vendel? 3 shekel, 5 shekel, 10 if it's a good day. Yeah. That doesn't include the schnorrers that are in the Midrachov and the Rova that are selling them for less. So that's Kabbalah. By the way, there are other kinds. They have the kind that they have things that receptors to access the supernal energies to electrify your house with spirituality. They cost $180 a piece, and they're called mezuzahs. And they also have portable ones. Okay, you can put them here and here. That also charges you up, and that's $1,800. Okay, a good pair of film costs what? Maximum $700. That's if you go for all the chumras. Anyways, his context is. That he might even be saying they made it up, hey badumi libam, but ours is authentic. There may actually be, there's a clear echo of the kind of context of the Renaissance context. On the one hand, ours is more authentic, ayin erech, that you like things that are old. So you know, that's the point here. And number two, the fact is that it's also based in absolute truth as opposed to things people make up on their own minds, which are not based on absolute truth. Things that are developed out of human logic are ultimately, you know, ultimately they undermine things that come from Sinai cannot.
So the bottom line is, I feel that this is funny.
Yeah, that the ethic, you know, it's Jewish, right? Correct. So Jewish ethics are no less Mi Sinai. that So that I think raises a that raises a broader issue in terms of understanding Torah, which I wanted to raise a number show you a number in the next few sources. Et mishpatai ta'asu v'chukotai tishmeru lalechet b'hem ani Hashem Elokeichem. This is a pasuk in Sefer Vayikra. You should keep my mishpatim and you should guard my chukim to walk in them ani Hashem Elokeichem. So what are, we all know what are mishpatim and chukim, but I brought you the Gemara in it's a sifrei like that. Gemara in Yuma Daf Samach Zayin Amud Beis says, Tana Rabbanan, et mishpatai ta'asu dvarim she'elmalei nichtevu din hu she'ikatvu. Things which even if they had not been written down, including the Torah, it would have been logic would have dictated that they should be written. Ve'eluhein, and what are they? You shouldn't worship idols, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, or improper sexual liaisons, Shvichas Damim, murder, Gezel, stealing, Birkas Hashem, blasphemy. Okay, those are things that are obvious, they're self-evident. That chukotai tishmeru, keep my chukim, dvarim shasatan, things which the Satan or Rambam would have our own skepticism. V'umos ha'olam, and the nations of the world, mishivim aleihem. That hashiv in Hebrew means to debate. Things they call you on, say, that's stupid, that doesn't make any sense. In Hebrew you'd say, ani lo mitchaber laze, I can't get into it, or you know, it's not with the norms, or get with the program, and or whatever. Ve'eluhein, and what are they? Achilat chazir, not eating chazir, levishat shatnez, not wearing shatnez, chalitzas yevama, the ceremony of release of a widowed sister-in-law, tarat ha-mitzorah, apropos, tarat ha-mitzorah, the process by which a leper becomes pure. I should not use the word leper because it's not, tzara'at is not what we usually call leprosy. We'll call it tzara'at. Okay, that's actually next week's parsha. V'sira mishtalech, or the scapegoat on Yom Kippur. All right, so v'shema tomar masei tohuim. Unless you think that they don't have any rationale, that they're meaningless, Talmud lomar ani Hashem chakaktiv ein lecha rishut laharer b'hem. You have no right to question them because I'm responsible for them as well. Okay. Question is, how do you interpret this brisa? So mishpatim are things which are normal and rational. Reb Sajagon calls them mitzvot sichliot, things which are just self-evidently clear. Everybody has them. It's something which anybody normal would come up with. And you have chukim, which are not so obvious and require divine legislation. So what does that mean? What does that mean? Does that mean that the ethical systems of other peoples are just as binding because they come from the same place, the same rationality, which is Rav Sajagon seems to have said in the 10th century, or no? There are philosophers, the Rambam implies this in one place, although I don't think he implies this in one place. He says, yeah, that's something that everybody has. And the thing that sets us, that's unique and most sublime for us, are in fact the chukim. Okay, that seems to be, at first blush, that's what seems to say. And Rav Avadya Meir Bart Nura seems to be arguing against that. No, sorry. Even those points of morality which appear to be the same or similar to what the rest of the world has, universal ethics, it's not the same. It's not the same. If you look into the details, you'll find out that the sensitivities, which in fact are brought out in the way that we do what we call mitzvot ben adam l'chaveiro, are fundamentally different.
Well, in those days, would we even call it universal ethics?
No, we wouldn't. No.
Western Judeo-Christian environment.
But that's what he's arguing against. You understand? The question is, who is Avadya Meir Bart Nura fighting against? He had something's forcing him to say. Obviously, there were those who were relativists and said, you know what, they have, we have, we're all the same, everything. No, he says, no, it's not true.
Is he the first one to say this?
No, absolutely not.
That's what I mean. So is he, maybe he's just bringing but he down, he's not arguing, he's bringing down a tradition, a line
except,
of tradition.
Except, look at the first two words. No.
Amarni.
It's very unusual for him. He usually just quotes the Rambam and Rashi. He's drawing apart, setting aside, pulling apart the curtains and saying, I have something I have to tell you. So yes, there were other generations where this came up, but he feels a specific need in 16th to 15th, late 15th century Italy, that this has got to be what it says. It actually has a very contemporary ring to it as well.
There is a sense that the Old Testament quote is fire and brimstone.
Right.
And that the New Testament is the one that actually has all the ethics.
Right.
that God is the...
Well, that's the classic. That's the classic Christian supersessionist position, that they have love and we have hate, and that's part of a broader, we have anger rather. That's part of a much broader discussion. But yeah, it's true. It might be an anti-Christian polemic here too. No question.
I felt bad listening to the last week's story. Touched the eye.
Yeah, yeah.
At least with the Kohanim, maybe they did. But this other guy, what did he do?
What did he do? Oh, so that is that's another. So that's a very good point.
Unethical.
Well, the question is how. The question is how. The question is how you're going to define ethical. The question at that point is.
I mean, would we act similarly in the same situation in terms of meeting out justice? You wouldn't expect God.
We're not God.
No, you wouldn't expect God to be worse than we would be.
But we, you know what? We live just as with the story of David Avihu. We live in a society which does not believe in boundaries. We live in a society that does not believe in limits. If I want to do it, that's all.
Or
that's what decides it.
Or if you do it, you get a warning first.
Poseidon. Yeah. Oh, you know what? I wonder if he didn't have a...
When you sped on the road, you get killed for it. We would like that.
Okay, Poseidon.
You give me a warning, I mean, something.
Okay, that's true. Okay, Poseidon. I don't, you know, that's a good question on the story. But in terms of the story of that of Nebu, for example, which that's supposed to be the parallel, right? You know, there too, their motivations were fine. Let's leave Rashi out of this for a minute. Their motivation was fine. They just wanted to do more and more. And the answer is no, there's a limit to what you can do. Modern man doesn't like to have limits. On the contrary, he says, if there are limits, then something's wrong with the Torah. Okay? You can't do that. Who are you to tell me who's a Jew? Who are you to tell me where I can go? Who are you to tell me where I can daven? Who are you to tell me where I can... Because that's exactly the way it works. All right, so we worship ourselves. Man worships himself in the modern era. Not like the way it actually started in the Renaissance, although it didn't get to that degree at that time. But the process the process by which man ended up first adulating and then deifying man as the be all and end all of all creation starts actually in the Renaissance, although they were profoundly religious Christians. But as time went on and secularization took over, so God went out of the picture, and then man just became the be all and end all. And you end up worshiping man, you end up becoming an idolater. Right, so, and what was the whole point of the Renaissance? Was to revive. I mean, there was a wonderful, book which I make all my kids read. By Dame Edith Hamilton. I used to say Margaret Hamilton, but Margaret Hamilton was the Wicked Witch of the West, or Cora from the coffee commercials. And she has a line in the beginning. It's the most wonderful introduction to Greek mythology and Roman mythology there is, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. In her introduction, she has a line that's really incredible. The Greeks made the gods in their own image.
Yeah.
I mean, which says a lot about the narcissism and the self worship of Greek society and modern society. Anyways, so the question is, so you could interpret this Bryce in a few different ways. What are mishpatim? Could the rest of the world come to mishpatim on their own? It's just the chukim set us apart. This was the position of Rav Sajagon. This is the prima facie, the apparent position of the Rambam in the parish of the Mishnah. Although it's not clear that that's really what he thought. Or no. Maybe it's simply not. Rav Avadya Rav Noor will say, yes, it's true. The Goyim can come up with the non-Jews can come up with something similar, but it's not the same. Because at the end of the day, you're not ethical because it feels good. You're ethical because you have to submit to God. Okay. In fact, I would argue this is. An atheist will not. No, I didn't say that. I said an atheist can be ethical. However, I think that ethics. The question is: when push comes to shove, what is the more proper, or the more effective, and the more real sense of system of ethics? Is it ethics that's imposed from the outside and internalized, or ethics that comes out of the natural person? You might, for every person who's a naturally ethical being. You're going to find a lot more that need to, whatever. And by the way, if ethics are not absolute, you can fump with ethics. You can play with ethics. You can play with ideas.
Yeah, but there are a lot of Jews who keep basically at the aspects of the Torah, but not because anyone would not. They just think, you know what, it makes sense. That's how I'm raised. sounds good. Societal compunction.
No, economy. And
but it's nothing to do with
and they are, that's yeah. true. They are ethical. And those are. But the question is, what happens when it starts being inconvenient? That's when push comes to shove. When things start becoming inconvenient, at that juncture, ethics can be fudged. And with that juncture as well, you know, at that juncture as well, there you can start seeing things as being ethical that maybe aren't, or maybe, especially today when everything is relativistic. I mean, I don't mean to be overly alarmist, but I happen to just see a clip somebody sent me of a woman from Planned Parenthood who was testifying before, I think it was Florida's state legislature, and they believe in postnatal abortions. Because it's not ethical for the doctor to impose his will on the wife, on the woman, that she should have, just because the doctor botched an abortion, it's not a reason to, it's not ethical to impose on her. So we would say that is murder. Okay, so, and they will say and there's no room, we say it's not relative, they say it is. Can ethics be relative? That's also a question. How do the two go together? Okay? In any event. So those are the two sides that you could argue on this Brisa. I think, however, the one thing that you do get out of this, if you follow Rav Avadya ben Bar Tanura, and I honestly do think that, you'll see in a minute, I think that that's actually the Rambam's approach as well, I think you find an answer to a question which has often bothered me. We say we make brachas over all kinds of stuff. We're constantly saying brachas. Okay, we say, but when it comes to one of the subcategories of brachot is brachot mitzvah on lulav and esrogen on whatever is matzah that's sphere so omer whatever you want. Okay, we don't make brachot on mitzvos but adam l'chavera. We don't. We don't make a bracha on stocking. We don't make a bracha on sitting down to do judgment to be sitting in the bezin. Although the rabbis would say they should. We don't make a bracha on whatever the case might be on being nice and opening doors and all kinds of chassadim that we do. We don't. How come? So there's a famous tshuva of the Rajba, with number three, which it's a very long tshuva. I didn't bring the whole thing. He says as follows: Tshuva zo sheila amukaf. Yes. How come we don't make brachas on bitzvos v'adam l'chaveira? And the earlier authorities, now he's living in the late 13th century, so this is like, whoa. Okay? And they were very perplexed about it. Why do you make a bracha on some things and not on others? Which one you make a bracha, and which one don't you? The truth of the matter is, it's all local. It says there's no one overarching rule because you can find different reasons around, because they're really different reasons.
But brachot in themselves, except for Birkat HaMazon, are quote unquote mid Rabbanan. So
I'll ask you, why did the rabbis not ordain a rabbi? So that's the question.
The question is not.
Okay, by the way, Birkat HaTorah maybe it will be Dorais also.
Was it a machloket in Gemara?
What?
You decided not to?
What about no. Brachot per se. Well, that's an interesting question. Brachot per se were not ordained by the Torah, except again Birkas HaMazon, possibly Birkas HaTorah. Okay.
The arguments in the Beit Midrash were fascinating. They may have decided on the end, but I'm curious if they had at least the discussion.
They had the discussion, and in fact, that's one of the things that Avchek Nesek Gedola did in fact start rolling the ball with in terms of the Gemara says in brachos. I didn't bring it here. It's something like Avchek Nesek Gedola Tichtu Lem Yisrael Brachos Tfilos Vavdolos, right? That Avchek Nesek Gedola, they ordained, they set up the structure for brachot and for shmoneh for the davening, the general structure, and for havdola. Why havdola is dafka? highlight is another question. In any event, so he says, so what's the reason? He says like this. He's got a few reasons. Ella kol mitzvah shein b'maaseh ein mevarchin aleha. So a mitzvah that doesn't have an attendant action, you don't make a bracha. Kigon hashmatat ksafim, that you don't go and collect. In other words, a passive mitzvah. So when 6 years go by and seventh year comes and somebody owes you money, that's it. You don't go collect anymore. So that's a mitzvah, not to let let it go. There's no action.
You make a bracha on seeing, hearing lightning.
Who says to see? That's an action. No, you're using your senses.
You mean if you just sit there, that's.
If the Torah says don't do something, Now, there's how, you know, there's a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah of not. No. But if, for example, or avoidance. For example, the mitzvah is that you should annul the loan. But how do you annul the loan? By not collecting it.
Right.
So it's a positive mitzvah, but you, which is fulfilled by not doing anything. Okay. And there, similarly, you don't make a bracha on mitzvahs which are not totally in your control. Okay. So it's good. It might be if you're doing this mitzvah, depending on somebody else cooperating, he might not cooperate. He says, for example, and therefore your action ends up becoming of no value. Kemo matnot aniyim, like giving out stocket, I have never in my life, ever.
You give too little, they might throw it back.
That's the only case. I've had schnorrers who've actually thrown the money back in my face. That's true. I remember once many years ago, God, it's about 35 years ago. Do you remember the five shekel notes? They had Weitzman on them. Okay.
Well, that's what you're.
Okay. Yeah. I was in Tzfat. I'll never forget. I was in Tzfat. Guy comes up and he says, "You have money?" So I gave him some money. He said, "You have something green?" Mm-hmm. So I pulled out a five shekel bill and I gave him. And he threw it back at me. But anyway, so he says, "Okay." So, but generally, my experience has been that nobody gives it back anyway. V'halvat dalim, giving loans to people that are poor, nitinat staka, giving tzedakah, giving money to a the Eved Ivri who goes free, and so on. And he goes through the whole thing.
Which means if we would make a bracha, it would be like a bracha batalah?
Yeah, absolutely, because you never know. You might very well, no, it might not always be a bracha batalah, but the chance is there. Bracha batalah is a very serious business because it's a violation of the second commandment. So you always, that's why self-ex brachas
l'hakel.
Well, that's what
I mean,
you're thanking
God for the apple the second time you bought it again. You bought it. It was a great apple.
Yeah, but even using bracha shel tzara. All right, so fine. So they may very well be. There's a separate issue. Maybe making an unnecessary bracha. Maybe a separate issue, subcategory of that.
The rabbis decided you shouldn't make.
Beseder, but when there's a reason, right? But what you see here is the sense. You're right. Okay, but you see the sensitivity towards the use of God's name. Interesting. One of the things a friend of mine told me recently, that they're really not, he came here for a visit, and really not used to it. In America, or in Chutzlaitz B'chalau, people say Hashem and Elohim and whatever. But here, it's gotten to the point where, you know, we use one of the seven, Shemot She'enam Nimchakim, the seven God's names that are supposed to be pronounced kale and this and that, to the extent we used to make fun and say we used to drink ginger kale, right? And we use it, Chofshi Chofshi, right? Elohim Gadol, right? And there, it's really not used to that. It's an interesting shift in terms of sensitivity. I remember a friend of mine he got married, married a girl named Batya, and they used to call her Batka, or Baska. And she, I mean, all right, it's fine, that's from kind. But still, it's, you know, it, anyways, the point that I want to make here is this. Independent of the whole of the Rajba here, I think that there may be an underlying reason why not make a bracha. What does a bracha do when you say Asher Kedishanu Mitzvah Tzivanu blank? Okay. When you pick up a lulav and an esrig, what is it? What did you do? You have to define it. Right, but the bracha does is you define. It used to be, the Ravid says that the Ravid says on the Rambam that saying the bracha is part of the Kiyama Mitzvah. It's an integral part of the Kiyama Mitzvah on the level of the Rabbanon. I would argue that one of the reasons why that is so, if the Ravid is right, is because the bracha defines what you're doing. Why am I doing this? I am making a declarative statement that I am fulfilling the will of my Creator. Because the action is not self-evident that a person would pick up a citron and a lulav, or eat the dict that we ate 2 weeks ago, right? Shouldn't make a bracha as anybody normal would eat those matzahs. All right, but it's not self-evident. Most birkot mitzvah are over chukim, if you think about it. Not all, but most. I think even at least a little pidrush. If you do chesed, if you do a mitzvah on l'chavero, you don't have to define it as a godly act. It screams out that it's a godly act. Because the nature of Jewish morality, the Rambam says, is lihidamotlo, to be like God. Just God says, I need you mahuracho, mafatachacho, mahuchano, nafatachano. I don't think you have to define it with a bracha. That occurs. Ma? Why? Ech?
אם אני עושה משהו לא הגיוני, אז ברור שאני עושה, כי אני מצווה עליו. אם אני עושה משהו שהוא אנושי, אז זה...
דווקא שם צריך לברך. Good point. That's true. You can work it the other way. That if the things that are strange don't need to be defined because they're clearly actions that God commanded or that you wouldn't do it otherwise. Actually, it fits the tshuva of the Ma'arik. But something which everybody else does, dafka he should then make a bracha because that shows I'm doing it as an act of submission to God. Okay, beseder. The Rashba remains correct. Okay. But as far as the question of the source of authority of all mitzvos, the Rambam at the end of the day comes down on the side of the Bart Nura anyways, even though I mentioned that he did go along with Rav Sadegon in an earlier stage. The Rambam in Hilchot Malachim, this number 4, chapter 8, Halachas Yud Nyud Aleph, says as follows: Moshe Rabbeinu lo inchila Torah b'mitzvot el Yisrael, shenemar marashaki ilat Yaakov. The Torah was only given to Israel and to anyone who wants to convert. At that point, kachem kager. This is a pasuk that pops up in a few places in the Rambam. The Rambam in Isuri Bia, when he talks about the process of, this is actually pre-Shavuos discussion, when he talks about the process by which a person converts, says we derive the stages of conversion from Matan Torah. There was Mila in Mitzrayim, and then there was Tefila before Matan Torah and Kabbalah Samitzvahs and a Korban. And we don't have Korban anymore, but Ari. Which means, by the way, that we're all converts.
It was Tefila.
Brachatu Bigdechem, the Gemara says in Yevamos that refers to that there was Tefila. Okay? Aval Mishal, the Gemara actually is a logical point. What did the women do? There had to be something. Aval Mishal Oratza. A non-Jew who doesn't want, ain't kofinolo to the kabel Torah mitzvah. You don't force people to convert. V'chein tziva Moshe Rabbeinu piagvura lachuf et kol be'olam. However, there is a group of mandatory, more ethical mitzvahs that have to be imposed. The kabel shemitzvot shenitzdavu b'nei Noach. The 7 men Noachide laws, which are. And not worshipping idols, and not blaspheming, and not murdering, and not stealing, and not eating animal flesh before they die, and what am I missing? Any gila, and certain types of, prohibiting certain sexual liaisons, and also set either having laws or setting up judicial systems, one of Dino and Dayanim. V'chol mi shelo yikabel yehareg. Such a person doesn't have the right to live in a civilized society, he has no place. Yeah, but a little bit anachronistically, but okay, yeah. Anybody who accepts these 7 mitzvahs, who anikra ger toshav, he's a resident alien who gets his green card, whatever, we don't have green cards, whatever the Israeli version of green card is, b'chol makom. And the non-Jew has got to accept the 7 mitzvahs, they knock in front of a bezdin, b'chol makabel lav lamul v'avru alav shnei masar chodesh lomal harez the kemina umos. And if you decide you started a conversion process and you didn't complete it, so after 12 months, that's it. Kol hamikabel sheva mitzvot v'nizhar lasotan. Anyone who accepts these 7 mitzvahs and is careful to observe them, harezem michasidei umot haolam. He's one of the righteous of the Gentiles. V'yesh lo chelik lo hamavad. That's the reason, by the way, when the Mishnah Brice in Shabbos, and this ends up quoting in the Rambam in Shulchan Aruch, says how do you address a non-Jew who wants to convert? You tell them you're crazy. You tell them you're nuts. There was a commercial. One of my trips to the States sometime in the last 20 years. I remember what state it was anymore. They all begin to look alike. So the commercial on the radio was a guy comes into a store and says, how much is this? And the answer was $10, whatever it is. He says, I'm not leaving here unless I pay 25. I said, that's nuts. It's crazy. So that's exactly what you tell the ger. The point, I don't remember the point of the ad, but remember the opening of the ad, the commercial stuck in my mind. That's what you tell the ger. What, are you crazy? You're already set up. You keep seven mitzvahs. You got a pchelik at olam haba. You've already got a condominium. No, what else do you need? Now you're going to start with Shabbos and chelik and this and this and this and this. And well, you got to deal with Jews. Shema Torahfim. No, it doesn't mean they're also distracted. That's what I mean. And dvuyim uschufim utchufim utorafim v'tzarot olayim. Ma, okay. So he said they have a pchelik at olam haba. Okay. However, this is the caveat. The kicker is you don't come to it because you figure that's a nice way to live. You have to act as an act of Kabbalat Olmachut Shamayim that in fact this is the way that this is what God commanded the non-Jews. It's one of the reasons why we don't really have a missionary impulse in Judaism, because any religion wants to worry about all of mankind. So Christians feel they have to missionize because everybody's got to get the good word, because otherwise you go to hell. Muslims need to conquer and make everybody zimmi to get them to convert to Islam, because otherwise if you don't live according to the ways of Allah, then you're going to go to hell. But we have this two-tiered system. So as long as the rest of the world more or less keeps the Shev Mitzvot B'nai Noach, then you're set.
Well, we should at least be promoting that.
In fact, that's what Lubavitch does then. And that's where the whole Noachad movement comes from. Yeah. We should. Now there is sort of like many authorities have it that as far as people that with whom we come into contact, that Christians and Muslims are more or less in the getter of Shev Mitzvot Bnei Noach. That will depend. That is predicated on the idea that Trinitarian monotheism is not avodah zarah as far as non-Jews are concerned, which is one way of reading a Tosfos in Bechorot and in Sanhedrin. They differ, but if you go with that, then the only group that you have a problem with are the Far Eastern religions. And if you're in Makor Rishon last week, my friend Professor Danny Sperber thinks that there's no problem with them either. So if that's the case, then most people would fall into this. Although the difference would be as follows: even if Hinduism is not a avodah zarah in the classic sense, the difference as far as this is concerned, as far as Shev Mitzvot Bnei Noach, whereas the Christians certainly believe that morality was commanded by God, and the Muslims, it's a little tougher because they have a different revelation. The Hindus don't have that, so how they would fit into this is open to discussion.
What does he mean here by the Mitnei Shetivavahem HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'Torah?
Al Yidei Moshe Rabbeinu Shebnei Noach Mikodem Nistavu Behem.
So are there two places?
No.
Are they in the Torah and Moshe?
No, they were that's interesting. I never thought about that. It could be. I always read it that it was the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave them the Torah and they were passed on through Moshe Rabbeinu.
No, Yidei Moshe Rabbeinu.
Is he talking about Torah Shabbat? That's a good question. I don't know. The idea, though, is that the source of authority, the source of authority for the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach are identical with the same source of authority as the Torah for us. Mamon HaSinai. Right, exactly. And then he goes on, exactly. So here the Rambam is basically, I think, the Rambam is basically saying that he agrees with Avadya B. Bartanura that ultimately the source of ethics is in fact
where does he see ethics here?
Because most of the Shev Mitzvot Bnei Noach are ethical.
Shrichot Damim
are all ethical mitzvahs.
That's the mitzvahs, but those mitzvahs aren't mentioned.
But he's here talking in general about Musar and whatever.
They're not mentioned in the Sechet Avot.
Right, but some of them, Dinim would be
the Havum Matuanim Bedin.
Okay.
The Midu Tamidin Rabe. Those are.
But the Shev Mitzvot Bnei Noach would ultimately include under Dinim and Dayanim would be under Musar and ethical and proper behavior in society. At least that's how I always read them. But notice how the Rambam goes. Aval imasa'an mipnei hechra hadat. If you came to the conclusion, if you arrived at the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach on your own, Ein zeger, but that, you know, it's based on philosophical speculation. Ein zeger toshav, ve'eino mechassidei umot ha'olam, ella mechachameihem. Now, you're not a ger toshav because you didn't accept it based on revelation. You're not a chassidot umot ha'olam because you didn't base it on revelation. Look, the truth of the matter is, I was wondering, like, somebody said, well, so-and-so is an atheist, he doesn't get to play Helek Helu or Mahaba, sort of like a Mida Kedeged, Mida kind of thing. No. That's true. He doesn't say you have no chelik l'olam haba. He says da'am mechassidei umot ha'olam. That's true. That's true. There are those who argue that they asked with the I started studying years ago. Would the Rambam have included Aristotle in the next world? But he says ela mechachameihem, and he leaves it open. Correct. You're right. Absolutely right. First of all, it's interesting, in the printed text of the Rambam before the Frankel edition. Actually, before the Yad Pshuta of Reb Nachum Rabinovitz, it said velo michachameihem. Neither this nor that. The implication being that non-Jewish ethics based on philosophical reason is of no value whatsoever. The person who asked about this is an interesting story. None other than Moses Mendelssohn, the founder of Jewish Enlightenment, who was very much caught up with universalism and so on. He wrote to Rabbi Yaakov Emden, who was in Hamburg at the time, and asked him, is this really the Rambam? And Rabbi Yaakov Emden pointed out to him, no, that there was a scribal error, and it's really not, but rather of their sages. Do people who are chachamim have a place in Olam Haba? It's an interesting question. Mm-hmm. It's delectably vague. But your point is well taken. If he leaves out Olam Haba, there's a reason. But I think ultimately, nevertheless, our ethical system is included in Galut. That I think that much of Rabbi Yevard Nora, I think that he would actually accept. Okay, we'll go a little bit longer. Okay, now what I want to start talking about, and we'll continue. We won't finish this today. I want to zoom in and spend some time talking about a shift in words here. Moshe kibel Torah mi Sinai u'misara li Yehoshua. Okay, back in the Mishnah, Moshe received the Torah at Sinai and passed it on, and it's Moser, Moser, Moser. In other words, you have an interesting shift. He starts with kibel and he goes to Moser. Now later on, okay, so it's an active thing. I pass to you. Okay, that's this Mishnah. In the following Mishnayot, is they came kiblu mehem. All the following Mishnayot, it's they received the tradition from the others. It's a passive kiblu. In the first Mishnah, the only mekabel is Moshe Rabbeinu. Why the shift in terminology receives? So what you have here is an expression of a fundamental. It's a word for Satorsky used to use, repercussive. In other words, has a lot of ramifications. The uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy. Because clearly, in the use of the verbs, the shift in the use of verbs highlights the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu's task here, his authority, his position is qualitatively and quantitatively different than everybody afterwards. It makes a very clear abyss between the two. So, but how exactly we understand that difference is a matter of some debate, and I want to at least start that discussion now. I don't like the, now in America, in English, they say I want to start that conversation. You want to call somebody up, you have to reach out. Mm-hmm. You don't reach out. You make a phone call. That seems pretentious to me. Anyways, the first statement about that there were a number of statements in Chumash about the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu. There were two of them that are probably the most well known. I've only brought one of them. One of them is when at the end of Baalotcha, when Miriam and Aaron start complaining, the kid brother, who's he think he is? He sent his wife away, and we're all Kambanu Diber Hashem. We're also prophets, and so on and so forth. And God appears to them and sets them straight. Excuse me, Lo Kein Avdi Moshe. He's different. We talk straight, you know, face to face. This is that you're a totally different.
Only Miriam gets punished.
That's Aaron, an interesting question. Aaron gets off the hook. Yeah.
Repeatedly.
That's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
Cojones protects him.
That's so they say. Anyways, the second statement about the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu ostensibly is at the end of the Torah. V'lo, this is Dvarim Lamed Bet Yudet until Yudbet. V'lo kam navi od Yisrael kemoshe shiyada Hashem panim ol panim. L'chol ha'otot v'moftim asher shlachol Hashem lasot be'eretz Mitzrayim l'faro l'chol avadav l'chol arzo l'chol ayad hachazaka l'chol amar hagadol asher asa Moshe le'inei kol Yisrael. Okay, that's how the Torah ends. Nevi'im end. Just so you get a sense of how central this is. Malachi, the last Navi, and by the way, that's why Nevi'im Masaru Lakanchik Nesagdola, that the prophets passed on to the Anshik Nesagdola, because the last, in the first generation of Anshik Nesagdola, you have three Nevi'im, Chagai, Zechariah, and Malachi. But don't forget, a period of Anshik Nesagdola goes from the early 5th century BCE, the time of the dedication of the Second Temple, all the way down to around 200. In other words, the Maccabean period, and the Anshik Nesagdola ends around the time of the Seleucid conquest of Eretz Yisrael.
Isn't the death of Shimon HaTzadik?
Yeah, Shimon HaTzadik. I don't know if he was talking about the story of Shimon HaTzadik coming out and meeting Alexander. It's not clear to me he was talking about Alexander or Antiochus III.
Even if it's not, at least he was the last.
He was the last, and he's pretty. It's pretty clear that Shimon HaTzadik is identical with the same Shimon who's mentioned in Ben-Sira, who lived around 200.
And is this like a replacement for the Sanhedrin?
Sanhedrin comes afterwards.
I know. So the answer comes, where did that 120 idea come from? Is it 10 members?
It's a good question. In other words, because all the Shvatim didn't come back. You know, it's a good question. I don't know the answer. I will try to figure out for next time, but I don't know.
We're based on Knesset. It seems to have.
That's true. They only had two parties, though. The Prushim and the Tzdukim, and in the beginning only one. They didn't do well with the two-party system either, so I don't know. In any event, Malachi says Zichru Torat Moshe Avdi, almost the very end of the Nevi'im. Zichru Torat Moshe Avdi Asher Tziviti Oto B'Chorev Al Kol Yisrael Chukim Mishpatim. Okay, so Moshe Rabbeinu, the uniqueness of Moshe Rabbeinu was here. He's the beginning and end of this whole business. The question is, so okay, good. So very nice. So I understand that Moshe Rabbeinu is unique. In what is his uniqueness expressed? How does it find expression? So it's interesting in that regard. That on the one hand you have this funny Sifri. The Sifri says that right below, Lo kam navi'od b'Yisrael kemoshe, says the Midrash, b'Yisrael lo kam avol b'umot ha'olam kam. There may have been no greater prophets in Israel than Moshe Rabbeinu, but among the Gentiles you have ve'ezezeh. Who's that? Ze Bilam ben Beor.
Very strange.
Bilam. It's a very strange Gemara. It's a very strange Midrash. It pops up all over the place. So the question is, what does he mean? So the Midrash has a tendency to say how wonderful Moshe Rabbeinu is and how miserable Bilam was. And they say that he's this and he's that, although there are Midrashim that say that Bilam wasn't so bad. And that's exactly what the Midrash, one of the versions of the Midrash says that in a certain sense, Bilam was Yodea Da'at Elyon, and Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't. Bilam knew when God was going to talk to him. Moshe Rabbeinu never knew when God was going to talk to him. So there were, it's not clear what this means. It's very hard to know. Especially if some people say that Bilam is a Chazal's code word for the founder of Christianity,
he found a stone in Eastern Israel
mentioning Bilam. Right, but when Chazal, sometimes Chazal are talking historically, and sometimes Chazal are talking figuratively. Okay, so for example, there's a famous Gemara in Megillah, I think it is, where God comes to Yoshua, Malach comes to Yoshua at the beginning of the book, I'm the commander of God's army, and it's scary, and Yoshua says, what's the matter? So the Gemara says that the problem was that he came to give Musar to Yoshua because he would vatle them from learning Talmud Torah. So a friend of mine who's Rav told me, a colleague, not an academic, told me that he thinks that actually the using Yoshua as an image for Bar Kokhba. That Bar Kokhba was organizing the revolt and so on, and this is sort of like a quiet critique of Bar Kokhba, who to teach him, A, there's a general who's a bigger general than he is, And B, you can't just get caught up with the military aspects of the revolt. You have to worry about the spiritual elements as well. It's interesting if that's the case. It's apshat not gemara. It's interesting in that regard because we know that that Bar Kokhba from the letters was concerned sending esrogim and lulavim and all kinds. I mean, he wasn't. Anyways, that's in any event. So what exactly this gemara means? Clearly, there is room among Chazal for somebody that's a parallel outside there to Moshe Rabbeinu. What it means, I leave open. Excuse me. Okay, beseder. In any event, so.
Although this is the story of Gemara about Rabbi Akiva and Moshe.
Right.
Moshe doesn't know what's going on.
Have clues going on. That will have to. I intended to discuss that Gemara, but we'll have to do that next time. Let me just point out what the number six, the Gemara in Temura, generally what the implication of the uniqueness of Moses' prophecy is the fact that no one is allowed to give mitzvot based on nevuah except for Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, the Gemara says in Temura this pops up in other places, but this is the more trenchant discussion. Nevi'im are not allowed to paskin based on nevuah. Gufa. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. 3,000 halachot nishtakhu bimei avlo shel Moshe. They forgot 300 halachas during his avelus. Amru lo Yoshua. They said to Yoshua, Sha'al, ask God. Amar lo lo bashamayim hi. Torah is given, fartik. Amar lo Shmuel. Later, Sha'al, ask. Amar lehem, elo mitzvot she'ein navi rashai l'chadesh davar me'ata. And then the Gemara keeps going on in the same direction that Moshe Rabbeinu is the only Navi. That's the uniqueness. Moshe kibel Torah miSinai umisara liYoshua because he got it complete. Whatever complete means, we'll have to talk about that. Got it complete. At that point, you work within the system. No more divine intervention to say
what
this is yes.
As a verb,
Masara means to pass over, to turn over to.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Tradition means passing over. To say over.
And it's unclear what Moshe got when he was up there.
We'll talk about that next time. Okay. Next year will be a week from this coming Monday. Okay. Please leave the sheets. I'm going to have to. I didn't realize I'm going to be clear. Thank you. Okay.